Good morning, Mother Earth. Thank you for all your abundant gifts. Good morning, Father Sun. Thank you for feeding all living things on Earth. Thank you, Plant Kingdom. Thank you, trees and plants, for converting the sun's light into edible foods that we can consume and digest, and for providing oxygen in the air that we breathe. Good morning, water. Thank you for being 75% of our body. We are one, and we bless you and protect you because we cannot live without you. Good morning, Animal Kingdom. Thank you for your companionship, your beauty and splendor, and for your sacrifice of life so that we may eat and live. Thank you, Great Spirit that moves in all things. Thank you for our lives and for the opportunity to be here and to be of service in this sacred earth garden of life. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello and welcome to Shaman's Keep. This is Caroline Wise King, your host, and it is such a pleasure to be with you today. It's a beautiful day. The sun is shining where I am. I hope it's beautiful where you are, although I know some parts of the country are still experiencing winds and rain and storms, and is summer ever coming? Anyway, I have a great, wonderful woman with us today. Her name is Jaya Bear. She's the author of Amazon Magic, and she's also the owner and facilitator of Puma Shamanic Journeys. She takes groups of spiritual seekers on trips to the upper Amazon area of Peru to take part in ceremonies with an ayahuasca. That's a shaman skilled in the use of ayahuasca, which is a visionary and healing plant medicine. She also takes groups on 14-day spirit journeys to Bali, the land of God, where they experience sessions with traditional Balinese healers, daily yoga, flower purification ceremonies, massages and spa treatments, and visits to temples and sacred sites, just to name a few of the amazing moments of this deeply healing journey. Jaya is a world traveler, born in South Africa, now living in Taos, New Mexico, and she is the widow of my old friend, the great visionary Native American teacher, Sun Bear. She's gained much wisdom in her life journey. So, Jaya, it is a great pleasure to welcome you to Shaman's Keep today.
Oh, thank you, Carolyn. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's so great to be back in touch with you. So many years have gone by since Sun Bear passed, and somehow we lost touch along the way. And so I'm excited about all the things you're doing now.
Yeah,
I want to go to Bali.
Please.
One of the things that I do on this show is I like to have people get a chance to understand the lifetime that shamans and those involved in the shamanic work have experienced, because most people on this path have had some really interesting twists and turns to their lives. And so it's interesting to me. You grew up in South Africa, right?
Yes, I grew up in South Africa and left when I was 17 and started traveling around the world. And you're right. I think, you know, I feel like I've lived through many lifetimes in this lifetime.
Yes, I believe it. So the first book of your life was in South Africa. What was it like?
Yes, and then, you know, really felt like my education started when I started traveling. I think that's the best education one can get, is the education of life and going to different countries, discovering new things and meeting people and learning.
Yes, it's so great because I believe travel gives us the opportunity to see other perspectives of how people live. And, you know, if we've grown up with one situation and we've never gone anywhere, we think that this is just the way the world is. But when we travel and go to other countries and see other ways of living and other ways of reactions and responses and perspectives about life, it really, you are so right, it really is an education. So where did you go first when you left South Africa?
Well, I left South Africa for the first 3 months. I hitchhiked with a friend, and I was very young at the time. And it's interesting because now I would never do something like that. It would be much more dangerous these days. But I went through parts of Africa, Mozambique, Malawi, and Rhodesia. Came back to South Africa and then went, my first stop was Israel, where I spent a month in Israel, then Cyprus for a week, Turkey for a week, Greece for two months, and then ended up in England, where I was for 2.5 years, and then went to India, where I was for a year and a quarter, and then came to the United States.
Wow. Well, that was an education, I'm sure. What was your favorite country? Where did you feel that you learned the most?
I don't think that I could actually say, because when I was young and traveling, I was in the moment, and everything was an experience of the moment. And when you're in the moment, everything is great, and everything's a lesson. Of course, since then, having lived all these years in the United States, I've gone to other countries and, for either work or for just to visit. And now I have places which are my favorite places, which, of course, are going to the jungle in Peru, where I take my groups, and going to Bali, which I am absolutely in love with Bali.
Yes, and it looks so beautiful.
Bali for me is a land which is on a completely different level of energy. It's as if the whole vibration of that land is resonating on a higher level, and it's because the people in Bali are every day they're praying. It's like they wake up in the morning, they say their prayers, they dedicate it to the divine. Offerings are made in front of every door and in front of every store. Everywhere you go, there's offerings, so they're acknowledging the spirits and the world around them every moment. And so, with a whole country like that, it's a small island. It's just on a different level, and it's very interesting because Bali is the only island in all of Indonesia that is basically the majority is Hindu. And what's more interesting to me is the Hinduism in Bali is it's not the same as Hinduism in India. It's a mixture of Hinduism, Buddhism, shamanism, and animism. And that's what appeals to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a truly spiritual country where everyone is living their spiritual life as well as the physical life.
Yes, yes. And it's interesting because tourists go there and they love the beauty of Bali. Is one of the most beautiful countries I've been. Now, I haven't been to every country in the world, but just the beauty of the land, the people, the architecture, the art, the dance, everything is extremely beautiful. So tourists go there, and that beauty they see and they can feel, when I take my groups to Bali, we go to another level of really the spiritual side of Bali that most tourists don't get an opportunity to experience. And for me, that's very special. I work with Balinese healers, and so my groups, we do yoga every day with Balinese yogi. We do people get to meet healers and have experiences of healing and purification ceremonies. Apart from also music and dance performances, and everything is beauty in Bali, and it's one of the most nurturing and healing places I've been. And it works together with the other work I do, which is my work in Peru, in the jungle, working with shamans in the jungles of Peru.
Mm-hmm. How did you, I know, it was after Sun Bear Pass that you made your first trip to Peru, right? And you met an Ayahuasca there?
Yes, after Sunday pass, it's like when we go through really deep pain in our lives, it brings us to an awareness of. I think it brings us to an awareness of who we are, where we are at the moment. And I felt at that time that I really needed to go through deep changes in myself. And I went to Peru. At that time, I knew nothing about ayahuasca. Is how you pronounce it, ayahuasca.
Oh, okay.
Or I had not met the first maestro. Ayahuasquero is the name of a you could say a shaman, because shaman isn't a word that's really from Peru. We use the word shaman. It gives us more of an understanding of the people we're dealing with. But an ayahuasquero is a shaman that has worked with ayahuasca and is qualified to lead ceremonies. Would you like me to explain a little of what ayahuasca is? Because maybe some of the listeners don't know what ayahuasca is.
Yes, I was just going to ask you to do that. So please do.
Yeah, well, ayahuasca is a vine that grows in the jungles of Peru and other countries in Colombia, Ecuador, all those countries around there, and has been used for millennia by shamans, by healers. It's used in ceremony. It's a vine that is prepared together with another plant. The other plant is called chacruna. The two plants work together. And they prepare it together. It's prepared as a drink, as a brew, and it's cooked for many, many hours. So if anybody's ever known or taken Chinese herbs and how you prepare them, well, you cook and you cook it down and you cook it down so that you have a concentrated, you're left with a concentrated drink. That's how ayahuasca is prepared, over many hours and in a with prayer and respect, and it's always used in ceremony, and it's used with a great amount of respect. Now, it's a visionary plant. People should understand that there's a huge difference between plant medicines and drugs. I've never taken drugs in my life. Plant medicines are different. Every plant has a spirit, and the spirit of ayahuasca. Ayahuasca is considered by many to be one of the greatest plant teachers and healers on our planet. And in the jungle, they call it La Purga, which means the purge, because what it does is it helps you to see things. It brings things out. So on a physical level, you're cleaning out. On a mental, emotional, spiritual level, things are coming out. So if you're purging, you're cleaning. So on a physical level, you're cleaning out your toxins, and it can provoke vomiting, diarrhea, different things. That's on a physical level, but it is working on all these other different levels at the same time. It's really a plant that is divine and a privilege to work with.
Yes, I hear it's not for the faint of heart, and I believe it because of all the vomiting and the everything, and then you have the visions, which some of them might be frightening, but it's your own demons that you're purging, right?
Yes, it's like you. What it does is ayahuasca shows us ourselves. So you're confronted with yourself, and if some people see demons, what those demons are is actually their own stuff that's inside of themselves. You know, energetically, things are presenting themselves in various ways. And so it may be presenting itself as a demon to one person and as something else to another. But what ayahuasca does is it shows us ourselves. It also helps to heal ourselves. In the process of seeing those aspects of ourselves, it heals. It also helps to heal ancestral things and it's work. It's not that vomiting is hard for me. That's not an issue at all. It's actually, what provokes that vomiting, And it's not that everybody has to throw up. It just happens spontaneously at certain times. You may touch on some deep psychological issue, and then you're throwing up before you know it, and it's like you've thrown up that issue.
Mm-hmm. It's out of your body now. Yes.
And the work I do in Peru is not only with ayahuasca, because I take people to the jungle to do work with what we call plant dietas, and that means dieta is Spanish for diet. And in Peru, when you say you're doing a dieta, it's understood you're working with plants. In the jungle, there's many different plants that are considered master or teacher plants, and these plants have very strong spirits. So it's not like just, you know, take a chamomile or mint. Although each plant has its spirit, including those plants, the plants that are considered master or teacher plants are the ones that are used in these dietas. We go into the jungle. I mean, the tradition in the Amazon is when nobody is considered a qualified ayahuasquero, which is the person that leads the ceremonies of ayahuasca, curandero, healer, vegetalista is somebody who works with plants, unless they have spent many, many years in doing plant dietas in the jungle. And what they do is they go into the jungle in total isolation, and they'll work with either a plant or a combination of plants. And during that time, they're on a very strict diet of no salt, no sugar, no spices, no fruits, no vegetables. Basically, what they're eating is rice and cooked green plantains. And there's only one kind of fish that's allowed. It's called boquichica, and it's a non-scavenger fish. That's the only type of fish that's allowed in a dieta. And being in the jungle, away from all other sensory inputs, you don't use soap, you don't use shampoo, you don't toothpaste. So all extrasensory things are put aside, and then they're taking this plant that they're working with, and they could be doing a dieta for either 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, sometimes 2 months. They're drinking that plant depending on the plant, on the strength of the plant. It may be they drink that plant every day, and it's not that this plant or a combination of plants are necessarily visionary, although certainly these plants work on a very deep level and oftentimes put you into a semi-altered state of being. That's their university. That's when the spirits of the plants come and teach them directly. That's where they get their knowledge. So it's their university. It's experiential, not just intellectual knowledge. And the songs that are sung in ceremony are songs that the spirits have given them directly, or it's been passed down maestro to maestro. And those songs are called Icaros, and they sung in the ceremony. And of course, when the shaman is conducting a ceremony, the ayahuasquero is conducting a ceremony and singing those songs, because they've done many dietas and they've had direct experience and they've come into alliance with the plants, they're pulling the energy of those spirits into the ceremony, and that's helping to heal the people and to give the teaching.
Okay, so when you say that they drink the plant every day, how do they prepare the plant for drinking it?
Well, it would be, you know, according to the, you know, many of these plants are either roots of trees or the bark of a tree. Sometimes I suppose it could be the leaf of a tree. Well, like in ayahuasca is a vine, and chacruna is the leaf. When that is prepared, those two are in certain quantities are prepared, cooked together. For when you're doing a dieta with a plant, some plants are just soaked. Maybe a root or something is soaked in water overnight, and that infuses the water, and that's drunk. It depends on the plant. Others may be boiled and prepared like a tea. It's always drunk. It's not eaten. It's always prepared. It's a liquid.
Right, as a tea. Okay,
Yes.
I understand
Now,
that.
when I take people to the jungle to do plant dietas, I'm not taking people so that they become shamans. That's absolutely not the, my intention. I don't think shamans are made like that. Everybody's wanting to be a shaman or believing they're a shaman. I think shamans are really born. But the thing is that these plants work on the energetic structure of the body, and they open up different energy pathways. And so when we go into the jungle, my trips there are like basically 15 or 16 days, but that includes the travel days, the integration afterwards. The actual length of time my groups are in a dieta is 9 days. During those 9 days, each person has their own little hut. And we're in silence. So, we don't have the capabilities of going into the jungle and being in total isolation. So we do as much of a traditional diet as we can, but we're taken care of. Each person has a little hut. The huts are 30 meters apart, so you don't see your neighbor, but you're in shouting distance. Our food is brought to us every day, and it's that same, absolutely bland food. The complete blandness of the diet is, in my experience, it's the traditional food that goes with working with plants. But in my experience, the reason is that it's so bland, it's almost as if my body doesn't have to make any decisions about digestion. And that allows the energy of the plant or plants I'm working with to enter me, to teach me, to heal me. And these plants work on a very deep psychological level. And so when we're in the jungle working with plants, we also do ayahuasca ceremony. We do 5 different ceremonies. For that, we come together to do those ceremonies. And all of this is under the guidance and auspices of a qualified ayahuascaero. So,
okay.
Very profound, These dietas have been for me the most profound experience of my life, really, I would say. The changes are subtle. And, of all these years, I've been taking groups to Peru for over 20 years now. I have to say that, it's almost like being reborn into another person. They say ayahuasca changes the DNA of the body, and I believe it. But now I've started to, in these last few years, I've started taking people to Bali, and Bali is a different experience. It's more gentle in a different way, but it is as deeply spiritual. And not everybody, the work with ayahuasca is not for everybody. But certainly Bali, if somebody comes with an open heart and absolute openness to the culture and knowing that these journeys are spiritual journeys with me, everybody who comes has to leave getting some healing and change in their life.
Oh, that's a wonderful thing you're doing. And I want to get back to Peru just briefly because I have really enjoyed your book, Amazon Magic, which is the life story of Don Agustin Rivas Vasquez. Did I say that right?
Yeah, yes. Agustin Rivas Vasquez. I worked with Don Agustin, for about 10 years, taking groups to him. The work with him was with ayahuasca, but we didn't do the plant dietas. After 10 years, I was taking about 3 groups a year to work with him, and it was, wonderful. People went through a lot of changes, and the work was, wonderful because the work with ayahuasca is always amazing. But after those 10 years, I started working with some other maestros where the work was much deeper. It was for me kind of like going from kindergarten to university.
Oh,
and
my.
The work that I've been doing since then over the 10 years after that, I've been doing work with these other maestros, and which also includes the plant dietas.
That sounds great. So are you writing a book about the plant dietas?
No. You know, I don't consider, it's interesting because I don't consider myself a writer. I wrote that book about Augustine because I knew that he wanted a book written about his life and what his teachings and what ayahuasca had to teach. And so I took it as a project. And the book is his story as he told it to me.
Yes.
And you know, maybe it, and the book actually won an award at the Independent Booksellers Conference and Association. It won an award. So,
Well, it's a fascinating story. I mean, he's had a really interesting life. He's a character. So
he's a
I really
character.
enjoyed it. Yeah. But I feel that you have gained so much wisdom from all that you're doing that maybe you should think about writing a book with some of the maestros you work with now about the dietas, about these plants and the spirit of the plants and how they work with people and how they teach. I think that would be something our listeners would love to get a chance to know more about.
Yeah, well, who knows? Maybe I will. I just, like I say, I don't consider myself a writer.
Yeah. Well, you know how it is when you're on this path, though. The spirits work through us. And so
Yes.
the spirits will work through you to write it. And
Yes.
yes. So maybe you just need to talk with the plant spirits and ask them if they will give you permission to write about them, and will they help you to write it?
Yeah, well, you're right. I'm going in the beginning, the first half of July. I'm doing another dieta with a group, and maybe that's what I'll focus on during my dieta.
Yes, I would love to know more about the plant spirits. Last week I had Elliot Cohen on, who wrote Plant Spirit Medicine, and he was talking about working with the plant spirits. And I think many people out there are right along with me. They would like to know more about working with the spirits of plants and how these spirits can teach us and how they can heal us. And this is something people are hungry for. So, yes, talk to them about it on your trip. And is it June or July you're going?
I'm my trip is the first half of July. It's
Is
it's
that trip? Yeah.
when I was I also produced I don't know if you know I also produced a CD when I was first working with Augustine by another ayahuasquero. It was recorded live in the jungle, and it's called Songs of the Peruvian Amazon, Ayahuasca Songs from the Peruvian Amazon. And both the book Amazon Magic and Ayahuasca Songs from the Peruvian Amazon, which is by actually Augustine's nephew, Luis Panduro Vasquez. Both of those can be purchased from Amazon.com. You can
Okay,
get
and
them.
also on your website, which is PumaShamanicJourneys.com, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And on my website is also the information. One side of the website is about Peru, the other side is about Bali.
Yes, I
And I
see you
have.
have it as two different journeys, Puma Shamanic Journeys and Spirit Journeys as Bali, right?
Yes. And for Bali, I have my journey to Peru is completely filled. I'm only doing one group a year of dietas to Peru now, and this one is completely filled. But I'm happy to, if anybody wants to contact me, I'm happy to talk to them and explain more if they have any questions. Bali is this space for people to come to Bali, plenty of space, and I have a group going the 29th of November through December 13th is my first group, and the second group is February 1st through the 15th. And I just that is such a gift to give yourself if you want to come to Bali. I would encourage you. I know
Yes.
you said, Carolyn, you want to come. I encourage you to come.
Okay, I have to talk to the spirits about funding this for me because I would love to go. Ever since I saw that
Yeah,
movie,
you know,
what was that
Bali, like.
movie?
The movie of Eat, Pray, Love. Unfortunately,
Yes.
that movie has brought many tourists to Bali, looking for, I don't know, for the
For
wrong
love.
kind of, yes, love, and also not really understanding, the healers in Bali. My trips to the jungle are rustic. It's we in the rust we in the jungle, we're in rustic situation. The trips to
Yes.
Bali are we stay in basically four all 5-star hotels, but special places that are more that are not so. I try to keep my groups as much off the tourist paths as possible,
Good.
and. The family that I work with is of royal lineage, and they own these two places we stay at. One is a resort that's right on the ocean, the other one is, inland and just really beautiful places. So the accommodations are it's a different kind of journey, but no less spiritual.
Yes. Well, it sounds absolutely wonderful. But I know a lot of people are interested in Peru. Now, the place that you take them in Peru, how far away is that from Machu Picchu?
It's a completely different area.
That's what I thought. So it's
It's a
northern.
completely different area. It's like Machu Picchu is in the highlands, and I am in the jungles of Peru. And it's like two different. It's almost like being in two different countries in the same country. I have people that come on my trips, and then they'll either come early or stay later, and then go on into the highlands after. But to come on the journey to work with ayahuasca, I feel people have to really understand and feel with their heart. It's for me. I've seen over all these years, it's as if the spirit calls certain people to do this work because, like I said, Carolyn, the work is not for everybody.
Yes.
Working with ayahuasca is hard work, and also some people have physical problems or are on certain medications that cannot be worked with together with ayahuasca.
Right. So, yes, they have to be able to be clear to work with ayahuasca, right? Clear of any chemicals, and
Certain medications are completely contraindicated, like antidepressants, for example, are absolutely contraindicated and cannot be taken together with ayahuasca. Someone could literally die if they did that.
Right. Well, it's yes, it's
So,
not a plant to be toyed with. This is serious, serious business, yes.
And unfortunately, in this country, it's not considered legal. Alcohol's legal, and alcohol damages you, whereas ayahuasca heals you.
Yes, but see that in our country, it's labeled as a drug, and it really
Yes.
is a sacred plant that is
Yes.
known as a high spiritual teacher. That's a big
Yes.
difference between that and, say, cocaine, which is definitely not a sacred drug.
Well, so cocaine is because it is that's a drug. It's been chemically extracted from a plant,
Yes,
and
right.
it's a chemical. Coca, which is where cocaine comes from, is used by the native people. They chew it, and it gives them energy. It gives it's healing, and it's part of their spiritual tradition.
Yes.
When people come along and they take something and they start extracting chemicals and making their own combination of things, it's like the plants. The jungle is filled with healing plants. And then what these big pharmaceutical companies want to do is take extracts. Once you extract something from a plant, then you have all these other. You have a chemical which has side effects
Yes.
and
Well, you
causes
know,
harm.
yes, well, I believe that these plants are sacred plants and that there's a difference between, we have vegetable plants, food plants, medicine plants, but sacred plants are spiritual plants and they have to be treated with respect as spiritual plants. And as soon as you take it out of that and try to just use it, and end up abusing it, then yes, it will turn on you. It can actually damage you. Look what's happened with tobacco. Tobacco was a sacred plant to Native Americans.
Yes, and it's in the jungle. It's definitely called, it's a sacred plant in the jungle and is used in all the ceremonies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like
and
here.
So, yes, and but then when they made tobacco here a recreational drug that is legal and people have abused it, of course they've gotten sick from it. They've gotten lung cancer and all kinds of problems from it because it was never meant to be used that way. It's a sacred spiritual plant that needs to be honored and used in ceremony only.
And also, don't forget that they added to the cigarettes, I understand 400 different chemicals are added to cigarettes that people buy and smoke.
Yeah.
So they're not getting tobacco, they're getting chemicals on top of it.
Yes, it's sad. But people mm-hmm. have to learn to recognize the difference between, a spiritual plant and a plant that is here for us to use for some purpose, like food or to make dye or it's given to us to use. But sacred plants are spiritual plants and have to be treated with great honor and respect. And that's what's missing, I think, in our culture that we don't recognize. Most people don't recognize that there's a difference here. There's like this thin line that separates plants we can use and eat and everything, and plants that are spiritual plants.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. And used in ceremony. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
Well, I could get on my soapbox about what they're doing with the GMOs, which is a criminal to merge two things together that could not mate in nature. Corn could never mate with Roundup, you know, and yet they force these genetic alterations that are, you know, really frightening because it could change the whole makeup, the chemical makeup. I know people that are having a lot of trouble digesting and assimilating plants that are genetically altered, and because the chemical makeup, the body doesn't recognize it anymore. You know, they've changed
uh-huh.
it. So this is something that
yeah.
could really cause a lot of damage to the future of the world as far as our food resources go. Because if you can plant corn that looks wonderful and tastes okay, but people can't assimilate it into their bodies, then there's going to be massive starvation because they've altered so many plants this way. And what happens when people can no longer digest and assimilate those plants? That's
yes, and who knows? And who knows how the genetic alteration can also do some really strange harm to our bodies? You know, never mind not being able to assimilate or digest it.
Yes, well, absolutely, mm-hmm. because they have been running tests recently that show that people are beginning to experience a lot of autoimmune problems and allergy problems that are directly related to the GMOs. So I'm glad that, you know, because they've been on the market since 1996. Most of the people in our country don't realize that. They think, oh, it's something new. But it's been around for 17 years or so now. And so we've all been ingesting Roundup all these years. If you ate soy or corn or canola or any of those plants, they've been around for that many years. So it's time for people to wake up and smell the roses. So,
mm-hmm.
Tell me more about yourself. You've been living in Taos for a while. How do you like Taos? It's beautiful.
Taos is a very special place. Taos is definitely a special place in the United States, almost like being in another country in the United States. It's hard to find, for me, it's hard to think where else could I live. I don't particularly like the weather. It's very cold at night, and it's dry, very dry. And I go to Bali, and I'm just, for me, my body likes the tropics. So, but the energy of Taos is special and holds me here. So,
mm-hmm. Is it humid in Bali? Is it really humid there?
It's tropical, so it's humid, but it's not a humidity that's too much for me. Georgia's way, way more humid. For me, Georgia was unbearable, but
Yes.
not Bali.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that because I'm from Florida originally and I've been out west for many years, but I went back a few 3 or 4 years ago. I went to visit the few remaining family members I have in Florida, and oh my God, that I've been away from that humidity for so many years. And when I arrived at the airport and walked outside, it was like a wet blanket hit me. And you can't
Yeah,
breathe.
it's
Your clothes are wet and sticking to you. Your hair is damp and sticking to you. And I'm like, how did I
not
live down
that.
here all those years?
Yes, not like that in Bali. Not like that at all. I
Oh,
mean,
good.
Bali's just and Bali's beautiful all year round. The time of the year that I go is the non-tourist season, and that's why I like to have my groups there. The high tourist season in Bali is, I think, June, July, August, and so
Oh, okay.
unfortunately,
So.
everybody's wrecked. Bali's become, a lot of people go there because people are suddenly discovering that this is one of the most beautiful places on the planet, energetically and in every other way. So.
So, winter time is the best time to go when the tourists, when it's not so touristy.
Yes, for me it is. The January is considered their rainy season, and there's half of December, January. But when I have my first group, the rains haven't really started,
Oh,
so it's
okay.
beautiful. And
Okay.
yes,
Okay, what about
so
February? February starts to not be so wet.
yes.
Okay.
And so,
All right.
yeah, I mean, well, you live in a warm place, but if some people are living that are listening are living in a colder place, they might want to come and get away for the winter and come to a beautiful place like that.
Oh, it sounds just magnificent. And everybody I've known that has ever visited Bali says, oh, God, that's heaven on earth. That's the place to be, you know? So
They
I
call
will.
it the land. The gods. They call it the hand of the gods or the morning of the world, and it's a reason. I mean, there really is a reason for that. I've truly not met been anywhere where a people impress me so much.
What is the
It's
predominant
it,
the language there? Do you need to have
No, you don't
interpreters
need
or?
to know Indonesian. It's like there's Indonesian. I don't know Indonesian. It's most people speak English, and in Bali there's Balinese language, which is I can't remember what it's called, but it's Indonesian. It's similar to Indonesian, but it's Balinese, and I don't have a problem. The people I
Okay.
work with speak English.
Okay. Well, it
Yeah,
sounds
and
great.
yeah. And
So,
there's one
okay.
particular yogi and healer. A healer in Bali is called a Balian. And they have different kinds of healers in Bali. And some have learned from the ancient scriptures, and others have learned, they've been, it's like they were born into it, and came into their knowledge, come into their knowledge through the spirit. And that's the person that I work with, is somebody like that, who came into his knowledge through spirit. And his both of his grandparents, his grandfathers on both sides, were extremely well-known healers in Bali also, or Balians. And his grandfather, if one of his grandfathers comes in dreams and teaches him, and he's just a wonderful person. And he teaches my group's yoga every day. We have a yoga class every day for those who want to participate. And then he does a ocean purification ceremony, a river purification ceremony, a flower purification ceremony that's just extremely powerful. And all the people that have come on my groups have just been amazed. It was way so much more than what they expected, because they didn't kind of realize that they were going to get so much healing and transformation, even though they knew they were going to be on a spiritual journey. What I found was really interesting for me in Bali is because the energy, the frequency of the whole island is such a high frequency. My issues, it was like a mirror for me, so it was like being in ceremony without taking ayahuasca. It was like being in ceremony, it was like a mirror in my face. And my stuff did come up. My stuff came up for me to look at. And everything they do there, like I said before, is dedicated to the divine. If they have a dance or music performance, a priest will come onto the stage and make offerings first. So everything is always with this dedication. And it's so amazing to be in a place that you're constantly reminded of the divine.
Yes, because they are constantly acknowledging the divine, and that's wonderful.
Yes.
It's kind of disturbing sometimes when I think that in our country, people go to church on Sunday for that 1 hour of the week, and the rest of the week they are busy with their lives. And it's such a difference from a shamanic point of view to live when you greet the sun every morning with a prayer, when you greet the plant kingdom and the animal kingdom and, you know, all our relations with a prayer each day. It just is such a different way of living. And if people could just grasp that concept of giving thanks to all this support system that surrounds us, that supports our lives here, because we can't live without the plants or the animals or the sun or the water. You know, this is our support system. So I'm big on acknowledging them and giving thanks every day. So they do this in Bali, as it's just a natural way of life to do this. Is that what you're
saying? Absolutely. And the ceremonies take, you know, for them, the ceremonies come first. So everything goes into ceremonies, and they are constantly having ceremonies. And, I said in the beginning that it's like their religion is animistic and shamanistic and Buddhistic and Hinduistic. And like, for instance, there's one, I think it only happens once a year, they have a ceremony where they acknowledge metal. And for me, it's like so amazing, because then they'll make offerings to cars, computers, anything that's with metal.
How wonderful.
Yeah, so it's acknowledged.
Kind of, that's
sorry.
Part of it's sort of part of Chinese medicine, you know, because they acknowledge metal as one of the five elements that we have to work with spiritually. So that's very interesting. Listen, Jaya, we are out of time. And so I want to thank you. This is, it goes really fast, doesn't it? So anyway, I want to thank you for joining us today. It's been wonderful. And people can reach you at pumashamanicjourneys.com, right?
Yes. Yes. Okay. And my telephone is on there and my address is on there.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Carolyn, for inviting me. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, yes, and you're very welcome. Now, for my listeners, join me again next week for an exciting hour. And until then, may the sun bless your face, kiss your face, may the waters bless your body, and may all nature sing in your presence.